Hello out there, we're on the air, it's hockey night tonight. Tension grows, the whistle blows, and the puck goes down the ice. The goalie jumps and the players bump and the fans all go insane. Someone roars, Bobby scores at the good old hockey game.
It's on like Donkey Kong.
Woohoo! Are you ready?
Yes!
I said, are you ready?
Jason Dale!
Daddy's too hot.
I like peni.
That's what she said.
Hump.
I love BJ's fur circus. Steven Ricker's testicles.
D-butted. No touchy place.
Beer.
Broken penis.
Vitellary Filippula.
Filippuli. Filippalapala.
Use your big boy words.
La 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 la.
Who's the brains in this outfit? My point exactly.
That was totally wicked!
Oh, the good old hockey game is the best game you can name. And the best game you can name is the good old hockey game.
Oh, yeah. And here we go.
Smooth Jazz.
And Iceman Insight, starring the sexy daddy, Michael Shockley, senior writer, webmaster, IcemanManiacs.com, as well as Penthouse Letters, and the Dirty D, live and in studio, sans clothing. How you doing today, Michael? I have no idea. That was not pre-planned or anything. That was
I just like sexy daddy.
Yeah, sexy daddy
is,
Michael
is
Shockley.
My wife writing your script now?
Oh, I got a story for you.
Oh, do tell.
So, Ivy had a nightmare last night and woke up at 4:30 in the morning calling for mom or dad.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, my wife is lousy parent. So, I responded to the call and went downstairs and got Ivy calmed down and everything else and took care of it. Well, tonight, she knows that I was going to do recording with Michael Shockley, and mm-hmm. she said, Dad, are you going to snuggle me tonight? And I said, no. She's like, what if I have another dream? And I said, well, if you have another bad dream, I will call Michael Shockley, and he'll come and snuggle you, and I'm staying in my bed. And she said, well, Dad, how about if you call Michael Shockley, and he snuggles Mommy, and you come downstairs and snuggle me? I said, okay. Everyone wins. Sexy daddy, so, Michael Shockley.
So does that mean like your daughter is my pimp?
All I know is we're 2 minutes into the show and you're on a timeline here and we haven't talked about anything. So yeah, since our last show,
all right,
we win 2 points. Here
yeah.
we go.
Iceman beat Gwinnett 3-1 in Saturday's home opener, which was a tremendously entertaining game. 10 things worth noting from that game. First off, the Iceman dominated the first 10 minutes. It was probably the best 10-minute span I've ever seen this team play. They had the game's first 10 shots, and Gwinnett did not get its first shot until past halfway into the first period. Kale Kerbashian...
We liked him from the very beginning since the signing.
Kale Kerbashian scored the first goal of the season at 2:36, and then scored again just 20 seconds... 26 seconds later at 3:02, and the place went bonkers.
He's on pace for 144 goals
yeah.
this season.
Yeah, exactly. Guy Lapine got his first fight of the season out of the way early. He pummeled Dyson Stevenson. What a name. Just 10:06 into the game. Last year it was like 12 games in before he got his first fight, and this year it wasn't even 12 minutes.
Yep, fantastic. And I got a call from my brother-in-law that was in attendance, not a huge hockey guy, but he said, that guy Lapine beat the crap out of that guy.
Yes, he did. It was a rather one-sided affair. After the two goals and the fight, the Iceman did take the foot off the gas a little bit. Gwinnett, I wouldn't say Gwinnett controlled the play, but it was an even game for the most part. Gwinnett did cut it to 2-1 in the second period, but that was as close as they would get. Jarrett Lucan added an insurance goal in the third period on a really nifty shot. He was to the goalie's glove side at about the faceoff dot and went far side, low stick side. It's a tough save for a goalie to make, and he placed it perfectly.
And a great call by you saying that you thought he might get one of the alternate captaincies, and good job there.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll get to the captains momentarily. Late in the game, Cal Heater instantly made himself a fan favorite. He made a successful effort to prevent a breakaway chance in the third period, raced out, slid into a hard-charging Gwinnett forward, and sent the Gladiator flying keister over tea kettle and into the Iceman net, and it was replayed about 300 times on the scoreboard, and the crowd started a Heater chant, and a star was born.
Yeah, and interesting, Kyle Frenetten brought up the issue on Facebook, but you know, why was he given a tripping penalty? And mm-hmm. we both chimed in that the NHL did change that rule. If you got the puck, whatever your action caused, you know, your follow through with your stick or whatever else, it was unpenalized, but they have changed that rule for this year.
Right. So I think it was a good call, and it didn't end up hurting the Icemen because Gwinnett took a penalty about 20 seconds later, and they washed out. So Heater overall played really well. I mean, 19 saves on 20 shots faced. He was not tested a whole lot. The lone goal he gave up was a power play goal. But when he was tested, when he did have to make saves and make decisions, he played really well. I was really impressed with him. He's really calm, real poised, never looks rushed. Never looks like he's out of his element at all. Just very comfortable out there. And I think, obviously, it's just one game, but based on the way he played in that one game, I think he's definitely got the chance to be a legitimate number one. And based on his resume, that's not surprising at all.
No, let's not go too crazy, though, because this Gwinnett roster, and I know you're the guy that you cut Lord Bartis before he even went to training camp just because you looked at stats. I'm not a paper guy, but you look at this Gwinnett team, and they struggled last year, and they did not get a very much talent infused into that club for this season. So they're going to struggle once again.
So we'll see how Heater fares against a better team is what you're saying.
I'm saying let's relax when he gives up five goals against the Cincinnati or something like that before we try to run him out of town a la Alan York.
Yeah. Yeah, let's not go down that road again.
Yep.
Other things of noting in the home opener, your new man crush, Sulek.
He's not my man crush.
You're a loyal man crusher.
Man crusher.
Okay, your side piece, Sulek, is indeed very smooth. And we learned that from Tommy Mason that his first name, which is J-A-K-U-B, is actually pronounced Yakub. It's not Jacob.
Vileteri Vileipula is what I got to say to that.
Yeah, so it is not Jacob. It is Jakub. He is Czech. It's not not like he's an American or a Canadian with a weird pronunciation.
My guess is, knowing that I put the pronunciation guide together for Tommy Mason, that this actually came from Sean Cooley, not Tommy Mason.
Well, who's Sean Cooley?
Oh.
Pooley?
Oh, sorry.
Close enough. Yeah, yeah, so Jakub Sulek, but he is very good. He's
Let's just call him smooth.
Yeah, he could be
smooth Sulek.
He could be there's that.
Hey, if LeSean McCoy goes by Shady McCoy, we can call him Smooth Sulek.
Hey, there's a comedian named JB Smooth. We could call him JC Smooth.
Oh, I like it. Yeah. Now all we need is a rap thing from Tater Man, and we'll be all set.
Interesting note late in the game in the third period. Referee Kenny Anderson missed about 3 minutes of the period after taking a hard dump in to the wrist about 5 minutes into the third period. It was on a Gwinnett power play, and the player had about a 30-foot-wide chasm in which to dump the puck. And, of course, as we've talked about in the past on this show, it seems like there's a big old opening in order where you can shoot, and the Pelaer still manages to shoot it right at the referee.
That shouldn't happen at the professional level. it really shouldn't. I have a hard time with it happening at the high school travel level. There's positions. We're trained as officials where to be positioned on the ice. everyone know, the players know that we're trained to be in those positions, and you avoid those positions. That's, like I said, this Gwinnett roster not filled with talent, and obviously not very smart either.
Yeah, so the shot goes directly at the official, and it was in line to hit him right in the old twig and berries.
They but, always are.
Yeah. Thankfully, he got his hand in the way to block it and save the old yam bag from harm. He doubled over and immediately stopped play, and there was a five-minute delay. And then after that, he went to the locker room with Patafi for treatment. The game actually restarted with the linesman working a two-man system
impressive.
For a few minutes. Yeah. Yeah, after he went back to the locker room with Taff, one of the linesmen went back there, and they consulted, and apparently he told him to keep on going without him. So they restarted the game. They worked a two-man system for about 3 minutes. And then at 12:15 during the first media timeout of the third period, Anderson returned, and he got a nice round of applause from the fans because at the time it looked like he had indeed gotten hit in the most unfortunate of places.
The no-no touchy spot?
Yes, exactly. So so it was...
And that two-man system, that's what we use in youth hockey. It, mm-hmm. It's a decent system because it gives you two linesmen and two referees for the same price. But the idea is, even at the high school level, well, the high school level, we usually three-man high school travel.
Yeah. Yeah.
But in the lower levels, you've got enough time, you have enough skating ability to call the offsides at the blue line and still follow the play into
right.
the zone. I couldn't imagine doing that at an ECHL yeah. level. That would be so hard. So good work by the linesman to suck it up and do that.
And they adjusted when it first started. They were trying to do that, work a two-man the way you would work it at a lower level when you're faster than the players. They did it for about 30 seconds, and then they started alternating to where the front ref, linesman, would cover the blue line for the offside, and the other one on the offside would actually skate into the zone.
Nice.
That way they were alternating zones in order to cover the line and have the other one be at the goal line in time for the play. So it was they were adjusting on the fly, and they did a really nice job of it. And but I'm sure they were both very happy to see their comrade with the orange armband come back, as were the fans. It was a hearty round of applause when he came back because, like I said, everyone thought he had gotten hit in the junk. And I don't care what you think of zebras in general. You don't want to see another man get hit in the junk by a 100-mile-an-hour slap shot. That's rough.
Yeah. Doubt about it.
So, yeah, it was good to see him come back. A couple last things from the opener. The first intermission featured the debut, or as we like to say on this show,
the debut
of Sumo on Ice. The suits have been borrowed from the Evansville Otters.
Nice.
And the debut match was none other than Aaron Miller versus Ryan Huff.
How could it not be?
I know, right?
I mean, that is just perfect. That's Hulk Hogan versus Rowdy Roddy Piper
right.
WrestleMania 1.
And I have to take a little credit for this because that's what I suggested to Steven Rickard. He told me they were doing sumo before the game, and I said, if you don't have contestants figured out, you need to do Aaron Miller against Ryan Huff. Or if they won't, Brad Perkins against anyone. But I was hoping it would be Aaron against Ryan, and it was. They did best out of three, and Aaron won 2-0. So something else to make fun of Ryan Huff about.
Well, yeah, obviously he shows up just like his St. Louis Blues. You know, all potential, no victories.
And the final note about the opener, announced attendance was 8,738. It was the second biggest crowd in the league during the opening weekend. And something I noticed when before the game, I was looking around during warmups, and I just thought it was really cool and kind of an indication of how far Iceman hockey has come. Remember, when we were at Swander, you would see a fair number of people come to games wearing hockey jerseys of all varieties, mostly NHL teams. Now, you go to an Iceman game, and you see it's not dozens, it's hundreds, plural, of people wearing Iceman jerseys. And on top of that, a lot of people wearing NHL jerseys. But it's just so cool to go to an Iceman game and see that, I don't know, it's like kinship. Everyone who's wearing an Iceman jersey, it's just a growing number of people. And it's really cool on a busy night when there's a big crowd to look around and see 200-400 people wearing Iceman jerseys.
Well, one of the things I love to see when I go to the building is all the jerseys from all the fundraising,
the auctions, charity ones,
going all the way back to the old CHL days back at Swander Ice Arena, and you see them all around there, and you see a Schneider, and Drew and Ashley Campbell are my favorites. They've bought a lot of those, and they interchange them and wear them and everything else, and you get to see it, and it's fantastic. And so, yeah, not only just the ones bought at the gift shop, but all those auctions, and you get to see the Harley Davidson ones and the Pink the Rink Night ones.
And the camo.
Yes, and they're all out
those
there.
Those camo ones with the black numbers that you couldn't see.
That was one rough night.
Yeah.
Iceman transactions.
The seasoning. Yes, the season opening rosters were announced last Wednesday after our last episode aired. Some notes from those season opening rosters or the seasoning rosters. Pleasant surprise for the Iceman, Patrick Kennedy, sent down by the Utica Comets of the AHL.
The rich get richer. We talked about how awesome this forward crew is, and then you get Patrick Kennedy sent down on top of it
at the last minute. That's really nice. We do still own his ECHL rights because we gave him a qualifying offer over the summer. Utica's ECHL affiliate is the Kalamazoo Wings, and normally you would just send a player down to your affiliate, but they can't because we own his ECHL rights and Kalamazoo
we
does
own
not.
Own him.
Yes. So, yeah, it was very nice to see him back. We also acquired a defenseman from Indy for future considerations. His name is Zach Sternberg. He is a rookie from Toronto. Played college at Lake Superior State, which, for those who aren't familiar with college hockey, is a Division I powerhouse. That's a very good program.
Yep, small school, but really good in hockey.
Yeah. His junior and senior years at Lake Superior State, he had 35 points in 74 games, so he does have some offense to his game. And interestingly, he's actually played in Indiana before. He played high school hockey at Culver Military Academy up near South Bend, which... Again, for those who aren't familiar, Culver is a prestigious prep hockey program. They are always one of the best high school hockey teams in the Midwest. They go to tournaments all over the place, and they are really good. They've actually produced several NHL players, including recently the likes of Ryan Suter and John Michael Lyles, both played at Culver. So,
yeah, John Michael Lyles went back during the lockout season 2 years ago and coached there.
Really?
Yep, and... Also, Culver does come down to Evansville from time to time to take on the high school travel team.
Really?
Yes, they do.
How does our travel team fare against them?
Not well. But I tell you what, I lined a game this past weekend of the high school travel team, and it is being coached by Mark Cody. And these kids are they're aggressive. They're in shape. It is a sight to see. So you want to talk about state tournament come February, late February, early March for this high school travel team. The Evansville Thunder may make a little bit of noise.
Do you know where the state tournament is this year?
No, they move it around between Fort Wayne, Indy, and South Bend.
Right. Yeah. Wonder if we'll ever host it here. Do we not have enough pads of ice?
No, what the problem is everyone hates driving here until we get
I-69
finished. Until we get I-69 done, everyone hates traveling here.
Yeah.
So
that would be cool though to have the preliminary rounds at Swander and then play the championship games at the Ford Center.
Yep.
Just do an all day thing, you know, a Saturday and have six games back to back to back.
Everyone comes down to Evansville and they love Swander Ice Arena. What Bill Nadeau, Danielle Crooks have done over there is fantastic. Everyone loves the place, but because of the travel, it always gets a bad rap. So we've never hosted any district figure skating or the state hockey tournament just because of travel issues, and everyone would rather just float around that Indy area.
Yeah, well, there's a higher concentration of teams in the northern half of the state too.
Exactly.
So, you know, even once I-69 is built, it's still an inconvenience for more people to have it here than it is to have it in South Bend or Fort Wayne.
That is true, but sometimes you have to inconvenience people.
Right. Final cuts from the training camp roster were forward Mark Anthoine.
Good kid.
Defenseman Lauren Barron.
That one hurt.
That was surprising.
It wasn't surprising. He's a puck-moving defenseman that doesn't score a lot of goals, and he's not overly physical. So he falls right in between. He's not a stay-at-home defenseman. He can move the puck, but he's not going to ring up until he gets situated and finds the perfect situation, he's not going to score you 10 or 12 goals.
Yeah.
So he falls right in between, and without that intimidation, ability to fight and everything else, he's a 5th-6th defenseman.
Yeah.
Until his puck-moving game opens up. So hopefully, we were talking a little bit before about the CHL teams. Hopefully a CHL team grabs him.
They already did.
Okay.
The Missouri Mavericks signed him and put him on reserve today.
Is that where Jake Obermeyer's playing?
Nice callback to last week.
Yeah, well, it's all over Facebook.
Yeah, exactly. No, he did not. That's not where Jake Obermeyer plays, but that is where a bunch of other Icemen play. They now have 5 former Icemen in Missouri: Mike Clemente, Dallas Earhart, Riley Grantham, Kellen Tochkin, and now Lauren Barron. So it's like Icemen West out there. The other two cuts were defenseman Riley Austin, who was just in camp on a tryout, and goaltender Brandon Kamm, who I thought was going to unseat Bartus until we signed Cal Heater. So Barron, I think, was the biggest surprise of the four, but given the final roster, I don't think any of them are shocking. And also placed on the 21-day IR to start the season is Dana Frazier, who sustained a leg injury during training camp. There were a few more moves made before Saturday's home opener. Also placed on IR was Peter Sakaris. I do not know what is wrong with him. My source has not gotten back to me yet, so I'm not sure what's up with him. And placed on reserve are Brandon Wong and Antoine Corbin. And again, maybe they have little injuries. Maybe they're healthy. I'm not sure. I got to think something's up with Wong because he's such a talented player. I don't know why you would put him on reserve if he's healthy.
Well, it may just come down to line juggling and looking for chemistry and everything else. So.
True. Then at the home opener on Saturday, we found out who this year's team captains are, as alluded to earlier. The captain is Guy Lapine, and the alternate captains are Matt Lowry and Jarrett Lucan, which is exactly the 3 I predicted on last week's show.
Like I said, congratulations.
Thank you.
Well.
Thank
who did
you.
I have for my other alternate captain?
Troy Rutkowski.
Oh, that's
you got
right.
2 out of 3, right?
Yep.
But we were both kind of guessing on that second A, and I happened to guess right. and then the breaking news as we record this show on Tuesday night is that...
Shh! We're live in the studio on Wednesday.
Yeah, yeah. As you were talking earlier about coming here on Tuesday night,
there's
Ivy pimping me out.
There's some knucklehead maniacs out there that Facebook me during the show and say, I'm right outside the door. Can I talk to Michael Shockley? So,
sure there are, yeah.
They really do.
There's people who want to talk to me, right? Yep. The breaking news is that Nathan Moon has apparently requested a trade on Tuesday afternoon evening. Sean Pooley posted on EvansvilleIceman.com that Moon has requested a trade, and it included a quote from Dwight Mullins that said, quote, I was caught off guard by Nathan's request in respect for both him and the team. I won't elaborate further, but I will work to accommodate his request. So, of course, the question among fans as of right now is, why is he requesting a trade? And also, why do you announce that he's requesting a trade when you could be taking away some of your bargaining leverage by doing so?
I think it's pretty evident that you just drive around town and you see the horrible job that was done with the billboards. Obviously, Nathan Moon wants to go with the clean-shaven look, but they photoshopped. Obviously, Rick Llewellyn is involved in this situation, but they photoshopped the playoff scruff onto Nathan Moon's face. And you just, if you're a clean-shaven guy, you're a clean-shaven guy, and you got to stick to your guns. So, obviously, it's the billboards around town that has caused Nathan Moon to leave.
I thought it was about the jersey unveiling on Eyewitness News, because there were 3 players involved in that jersey unveiling, and the player modeling the blue jersey, Dylan Clark, no longer here.
Yeah.
The player modeling the black jersey, Nathan Moon, once out. The player modeling the white jersey, Kale Kabashian, his jersey was worn for the home opener, and he scored 2 goals. So I think it's just that Moon and Clark are just mad that their jersey didn't get chosen. Kerbashian's white jersey got chosen for the home opener, so They said, screw this joint. Let's blow this popsicle stand.
Nathan Moon, he has rocked the red jeans in the past. He's obviously a fashion diva, so he's a guy that wants attention for his clothing.
Maybe he wants to go to a team that has red in their jersey.
Maybe.
Is he going to go to Indy?
Maybe.
We owe them future considerations for Sternberg.
So he can wear red pants and a white home jersey with red trim in it, and then when he leaves at the end of the night and heads to the bar, he can wear his red Levi's and wear his jersey.
Exactly.
And it still matches.
We've got it all figured out.
I think so.
This is where you go for top-notch information like this, ladies and gentlemen.
This is cutting-edge information.
Is. And in all seriousness, we joke about it, but none of us know the story behind this. And it bugs me when people go on Facebook, and yes, it's Facebook, and I understand that people are just going to say what's on their mind, but it bugs me when people just start wildly speculating about stuff. Oh, well, he's mad because he didn't get the captaincy, or something went wrong with his girlfriend, or all these things like that. You don't know that, and no one knows the real situation, probably, except Moon himself and Dwight Mullins.
Yep.
And it's not any of our places to speculate and potentially sully a guy's reputation. What I will say is, if you don't want to be here, you shouldn't be here.
Yep.
For whatever the reason, and Dixie said this on the Asylum, if you don't want to be here, then go ahead and go find work somewhere else. We want guys on this team that want to be playing for the Evansville Icemen. And regardless of the reason, if you're not in for that anymore, then okay, don't let the door hit you.
And on the flip side, the character of Nathan Moon, he came back last year. He was not healthy, and he wanted to help this team into the playoffs, and he played hurt. I would sit in the press box. Jeff Pyle was on the bench, and we would talk on the bus on the ride after a game, and he could get no velocity on his shots, on his passes. I mean, he was obviously injured, but he came back early and played through it to try and put this team in the playoffs, and that's the kind of character this kid has, and also from being on the other side of having to coordinate Iceman Live and everything else, he was always there for me. If I needed anything, an interview, come on Iceman Live, help me out, bail me out, blah, 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 he was always there for me, off ice and obviously on ice. So.
And he's done a bazillion appearances for No More Bullies.
So he's got a great character, kid. Who knows what the story is, but obviously this is it, that we talk about this for 3 years. It's the ECHL. It's minor league hockey. It's not the NHL. Rosters change all the time.
Yep.
Do love the team. Embrace the players, but don't get personal when things go wrong. Because before you know it, Matt Krug's in Fort Wayne.
Right.
And Dylan Clark's going to come back to town and burn us because he's obviously tearing it up. So.
Yep. It's just change is inevitable. The only thing that's consistent in minor league hockey is that things are inconsistent.
Yes. But the one thing that is consistent in minor league hockey is IcemanManiacs.com. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. All the information you need on the roster, schedule, and everything else. Don't trust those magnetic schedules they handed out to you. They're not correct. IcemanManiacs.com is correct. And at any time, you can click on the red graphic, visit the Maniac message board for the updated roster.
Yeah, that thread with the roster and transactions has already gotten over 5,500 views for this season. So people are apparently getting the word.
Dude, you need to start charging like a penny for that or something. It's like Google does. Forward lines and defense pairings after one game. Wow.
Yeah.
You are aggressive.
Yeah. Obviously, these will change many times over the course of the season, but just quickly wanted to take a look at what Mullen started with on Saturday. This is definitely going to change now. One forward line was Matt Lowry, Nathan Moon, and Kale Kerbashian. The line looked really good on Saturday.
Well, and I talked about Matt Lowry just when we signed him back in the offseason, bringing him back in, and there's always the fear with Matt Lowry. It's sooner rather than later, he's going to leave us. He's going to the AHL. He is too defensively responsible. He is too fast. He's too physical. He is too much of a complete hockey player not to stick at the AHL level. But until that happens, he's our top line.
It's really nice to have him, yeah. He and Moon and Kerbashian played really well, and Kerbashian, this is the first time we've gotten to see him in person, he is clearly a weapon. He's fast, he's got great hands. You keep him on a top line all year, and it's going to be a lot of fun to watch him develop at the ECHL level this year. Another forward line was Yakub Sulek, J.C. Smooth.
J.C. Smooth.
Danny Hobbs and Kevin Harvey. And my takeaway from that line was when Harvey was signed, it seemed like he was coming in to be an enforcer. And after having seen him play a game, he's not your typical enforcer. This is a good all-around energy type player. He took a regular shift on that line, and he did not look out of place at all. This is a guy that can play every single shift and play pretty responsibly, and it seems to, you know, be disciplined and not be a liability out there, as a lot of enforcers are if they're forced to take a regular shift. So don't know if he'll take a regular shift every game, but he's off to a good start after one. The third forward line was Jarrett Lucan, Patrick Kennedy, and Andre Bouvet-Morissette. And I had two takeaways from that line. One, Kennedy is clearly AHL seasoned at this point. He looks even better than he did before he went up last year. And ABM looks really confident.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's just that he's in better shape or if he feels like he's got better line mates or if it's the coaching change or what, but he looked really good and really, he was really in tune with the game, and you could see he was reading the ice really well.
Well, I think part of it, too, with Andre Bouvet-Morissette is he's really bounced around between the AHL and ECHL so many times. 2 years ago, before he came to the Iceman, when he was in Cincinnati, I think he played on four teams, two in the AHL and two in the ECHL.
Yeah, he's bounced around a lot.
And as horrible as the injuries were last year, he spent an entire year as an Evansville Iceman, both on the ice and off the ice. So I think he just has some of that confidence that this is what I do, this is who I am, this is my role, and this is who I'm going
to
be.
And yeah, he's starting to feel comfortable in his skates.
Exactly. Well, just with the team and just the fact, I can't imagine, you know, we like to talk about these players and judge them and talk about, you know, their commitment level and how hard they're working and everything else. But how many of us have moved to four different cities in 1 year for our job?
That's got to be exhausting.
Yeah.
I don't even like to travel to four different cities in a year for like a weekend, let alone move. Yes.
So, you know, he gets a whole year where he's an Evansville Iceman, and then he comes back to Evansville. I think it just settles down his game, and you just get confidence just knowing you're going back to your apartment, and you know the town, and you know the city, and everything else.
Yeah.
So.
That line of Lucan, Kennedy, and ABM got the start on Saturday. The 10th forward was Dirk Southern, and three forwards did not play. Brandon Wong is on reserve, as mentioned, and Peter Sakaris and Dana Frazier are both on IR. The D pairings, Ty Wishart and Troy Rutkowski did play together. My initial thought on them is they're probably not as good as the Larkin-Lavin duo we had at the start of last year, but I think they're going to be just fine as our number one pair. They looked very solid together. Wishart had a couple of sloppy plays where he just lost the puck and bad turnovers, but it just seemed like opening
game
night jitters.
Stuff, yeah.
As far as positioning and things like that, I didn't see any red flags. So I think they're going to be fine as our top pairing, arguably our top pairing. The start on Saturday went to Guy Lapine and Donnie Harris playing with Lapine.
I love it. And it just, there were some situations last year, since I was privy to it, of there was three guys on the bubble to make this club, and Donnie Harris is one of them, and I don't want to get into the other names of the other two players, but you can only keep 21 guys, 23 with the reserves, whatever it is, and Coach Pyle had to make some cuts, and he cut some guys, and he told all of them the same thing: stay in shape, find a job, and as soon as I have an opening, I'm bringing you back. And Donnie Harris went down to Florida because he wanted to be in Florida, but he played for the Pensacola Ice Pilots in the SPHL, and he honed his craft. And as soon as Pyle got an opening, he brought Donnie back, and Donnie was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
The other two guys quit. And when we had forward injuries and call-ups and everything else, Pyle reached out to these two former guys that got cut right on the bubble at training camp, and they gave the whining and song and dance and everything else, but they would not come back. And that shows the character of Donnie Harris. He put himself in a position to be ready to come back, and boy, he's worthy to play with a Guy Lapine and do what he does. We've seen Donnie Harris uncork that big old slap shot. He plays solid in the defensive end. He moves the puck well. I think it's going to be fantastic.
Yeah, it's not real surprising that he got big minutes and playing with Lapine, because at the first Iceman Live, Mullen spoke very highly of Donnie. Somebody asked if there were any players that surprised him pleasantly, you know, in training camp. And Donnie was the first player he mentioned, and that he was really impressed with his work ethic and the way he came to camp, and he came in great shape, and he's just working super hard. And I mean, it was a very glowing recommendation for Donnie Harris. So not surprising at all that he got that pairing and a lot of minutes. He played a lot on Saturday.
Donnie Harris, a close friend with Matt Krug, and how fantastic would it be the first Fort Wayne Comet matchup and Donnie Harris drops the gloves with Matt Krug. Calling it here now.
Oh, we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see.
The third D pairing on Saturday was Zach Sternberg and Randy Cure. They didn't play a whole lot. Looked okay when they were out there.
It's a story of my hockey career.
Yeah. So I can't really pass judgment. They looked okay. They didn't stand out in a bad way. And in a lot of cases, that's all you really ask for out of defenseman, especially a third D pairing. So they're off to a decent start. The two defensemen who did not play were Zach Curry. He was a healthy scratch on the active roster, at least I presume healthy. And Antoine Corbin, who is on reserve.
And we talked a little bit last show. I have some concerns about the depth, about this defensive core. Our forwards are amazing. Can this D hold up to the D that they have in Greenville and in Reading? But this is a nice situation where, I mean, you have a Zach Curry and an Antoine Corbin, and you can work them into the lineup, and you can coach them up through practice and everything else. There could be something special right here. Mm-hmm. And this team is going to be led by the forwards. If the D-men just hold the ground and the goalies come up big, there could be something special here.
Very much so. Also worth noting, the first power play unit, I thought you'd like this because of who was working the point. Obviously, again, this is going to change, but the power play unit, the forwards were Moon, Kerbashian, and Kennedy, and working the point were Rutkowski and ABM.
Yeah.
And he looked good, too. He was doing that kind of swing position where he'd be at the corner point, and he'd work down to the hash marks and then circle back up to the point.
Yeah, I want to see it. This sounds awesome. And Andre Bouvet-Morris said, fantastic, in-shape, hard-working guy off the ice. And, boy, to work him loose, the best thing about being a defenseman is on the power play, because you have so much room to move side to side and cutting through the slot. And, boy, to turn him loose like that and see what he can create, that's going to be interesting. I'd like to watch that for about 20 games this season and see how that works out.
I'm in agreement.
Good.
Moving on.
Moving on to Shockers Hockey Rock Song of the Week.
All right, so this is not a rock song, but it is a song I used to play at Swander. It was a big new wave hit back in 1985, and it is in honor of Cal Heater sending a guy spinning through the air. This is Dead or Alive, You Spin Me Round Like a Record.
Do You Think has been an outreach to inner city and area youth for over 20 years. Home of a coffee house, a vintage store, radio station, and music venue, You Think has run solely on the donations of supporters. Donation is easy, online, and secure. Visit our website, wiredwiredwired.com. Click to donate and join our You Think family of supporters.
Now, Iceman Insights with Michael Shockley.
And Daddy.
And Daddy.
Oh, yes. And we're back. How are you?
That was Kenny G.
Yeah, I can do that. I can do that. That was the old Brian Patafi intro.
Yeah.
And the old Kenny G joke.
Talk about it was an 85 new wave hit. Yeah. That was Dead or Alive.
Yeah.
You spin me round.
Michael Shockley, the Shocker, and Dirty D live, 96.9 WYIR, Wired. Around the ECHL.
A few things of note from around the league. First off, the Rapid City Rush were not supposed to start their season until this coming weekend, but the deal with the CHL changed that at the last minute, and they were the only CHL transfer to play this past weekend. They played against the Colorado Eagles, their former rivals from the CHL days when the Colorado was in the CHL, and they actually split the games. Rapid City won the first of the two. So kudos to them on short notice with not much training camp. They won their home opener 5-1, and in that game, Dylan Clark was a star. He had a Gordie Howe hat trick, or as Ben Early says, a Gordie Howell hat trick. he had a goal, two assists, and a fight, and was +3 for the Rush that night.
I am big on Dylan Clark this year. He had that hip injury last year. He had to rehab it and everything else. It drove him crazy, but he was one of the best icemen at the end of the year. He was controlling the puck, playing huge at both ends of the ice. He could have a monster season this year.
We've seen what he can do healthy.
This could be one mistake Dwight Mullins has made was letting him go.
Well, at least he let him go to a team that we don't play.
Yep. Well, yeah.
At least until,
because
until
we're not,
the finals.
Because we're not in the Western Conference anymore.
Exactly, yeah. Oh, the memories.
Yeah.
Talk about a renewing a rivalry. There were 7 fights in that first game. And then, of course, they turn around in the rematch on Saturday, and there were no fights and only 8 minor penalties. Colorado won that game 3-2.
Boys will be boys.
Yeah. Also in the Western Conference, the defending champion Alaska Aces off to a very rough start against the Ontario Reign. Ontario went to Anchorage for 3 games in 3 days and won all 3 of them, 3-1, 4-0, and 4-1. The Reign became the first team in 6 years to go into Alaska and sweep a 3-game series against the Aces. And for those who don't know how the scheduling typically works, virtually every team that goes to Alaska plays a 3-game series. So it's not like they don't do that very often. There's been a lot of opportunities, and that's the first time somebody's done it in 6 years. So very impressive for the Reign. Not so impressive was Alaska. Their opening night home opener crowd was only 33-18, and that featured the raising of their championship banner. They averaged 46-19 last year, but only 3,300 for their home opener. That's unfortunate.
Well, I'm not that worried about it. Do they even have snow on the ground yet in Alaska?
I don't
think they got snow there. But Alaska's an interesting team because they've brought in a lot of talent, but they've lost a lot of talent. So this is going to be a chemistry thing that's going to take place over the next, because some of the names that are up there, not to mention Shane Heffernan getting the camp tryout, but some of the names they have up there are big-time names from the ECHL, but they lost so many guys, too. It's just going to take a little bit of time. So
I think they'll be fine.
And, you know, yeah, a lot of people didn't show up for the championship banner, but we put a championship banner up in our building, and we haven't seen
it's
it since. you know, what's more important, the fans that come out to watch it or the fact that the championship banner's there?
For us, everyone showed up except the championship banner. and finally, back here in Indiana, it's time to talk about the greatest honor in hockey, the Hoosier Hockey Championship belt.
Explain it.
Do you have any idea what I'm talking about?
Well,
have you been paying any attention to me?
I actually saw something on Facebook, and I didn't know if it was real or not, but I thought it was awesome.
It's real. It is. The full details are on IcemanManiacs.com, but it is inspired by there's a blog called Conference 3 that is about the Central Division in the NHL. And it's called Conference 3 because when the NHL was first talking realignment, they were just numbered conferences. It was Conferences 1, 2, 3, and 4. And Conference 3 became the Central Division. And in Conference 3's blog, they have what they call the Conference 3 Championship Belt. And it's basically a different way of honoring teams throughout the season. Everyone obviously wants to win in the playoffs, but this gives something fun for fans to track during the regular season. And it started with the very first in-conference or in-division game, and whoever won that was awarded the Conference 3 Championship Belt. And then the next time they played a divisional game, they defended the belt. And either you defend it or you lose it. And it continues that way throughout the whole season. So now that we have three teams in Indiana in the ECHL, I thought it would be fun to have the same thing for us. So for some bragging rights in the state of Indiana, the Evansville Icemen, the Indy Fuel, and the Fort Wayne Comets will be fighting for the Hoosier Hockey Championship Belt throughout this season. And I will be tracking everything. We'll talk about it here on the show, but nice. I'll be tracking it on IcemanManiacs.com on the Maniac message board with team records and a log of all the games. There are 30 total games that are head-to-head Indiana team versus Indiana team this season. So there will be ample opportunity for the belt to change hands throughout the season. I think it should be, if nothing else, it'll be fun for some fans. Some people may think it's a waste of time, and if so, then you don't have to pay attention to it.
I'm sure Don Breck will take it very seriously.
But for those who do think it's fun, cool. That's the whole point. It's just something fun for the fans to talk about. And Conference 3 actually got some pub about it. Some of the players in the Central Division got wind of it and talked about it, you know, jokingly, but they talked about it in post-game pressers and stuff, that they were happy that they defended the Conference 3 title. So who knows? Maybe their players will get wind of this and have some fun with it too. But if not, it's for the fans. So the Hoosier Hockey Championship belt is off to a good start, even though the Comets
suck.
Hold the title after the opening weekend.
Is that because they're 2-0?
Yes. In a way. On Friday night, the title was on the line for the first time.
You didn't just give it to the Indy Fuel. It was the first game
that was head-to-head.
The Hoosier, yeah, gotcha.
Right. So Friday night, Fort Wayne and Indy played in Indy, and Fort Wayne won 5-4 in a shootout. In that game, the Fuel were actually up 3-0. And then the Comets scored 4 unanswered goals in a span of 7:26 in the third period. The Fuel needed a game-tying goal with a minute left to force overtime. And then the shootout went 9 rounds, so it was quite a game. In that game, they had a standing-room-only crowd of 64-77 in Indy. The place only holds about 6,100, so very cool, very good turnout.
Barry Schickling from ECHL Weekly TV show, I hooked up with him on Saturday, and he told me it was fantastic. He went up to Indy and saw the whole thing, and they brought the Chicago Blackhawks
anthem singer.
Yes, and he said it was a fantastic. They served mac and cheese with lobster or brisk. brisk in the VIP lounge for the media before the game. So, yeah.
Man.
Yeah.
So Fort Wayne won the title first, and then on Saturday, the teams played each other again, so they had to turn around and defend it right away against the Fuel, and they were successful in doing so. Fort Wayne won 4-3, which was their home opener. The Fuel again went up 2-1 in that game, and then the Comets scored 3 unanswered goals and held on from there. Attendance in Fort Wayne for their opener was 87-88, which was the largest crowd in the ECHL this weekend. But down quite a bit from their last two home openers. They drew 96-76 last year and over 10,000 2 years ago.
Well,
I think 87-88 is pretty darn good.
It is, but obviously the Fort Wayne people are just weak.
Yeah.
They're just weak.
Agreed.
Yeah. I mean, how many of them are on Iceman Maniac's Facebook page?
Yeah.
Because they just don't even like each other anymore. Yeah. So they're all sellouts.
Agreed. So up next in the Hoosier Hockey Championship Belt Series, Saturday's game between the Icemen and the Fuel here in Evansville will be a non-title affair.
Is that to see who's the next contender?
Not officially, no. The Comets' next title defense will be Sunday in Indy against the Fuel. So the Fuel get their third crack at the title, and we'll see if they win it this time.
Well, that'll suck if we sweep Indy this weekend and then they beat Fort Wayne.
Well,
they beat Fort Wayne and then take over the belt.
But if they take the belt on Sunday on Sunday, then we will get a shot at it the following weekend because our next three games are all against Indy.
There you go.
So
works out perfect.
We'll get a shot sooner or later. So there you go. That's the Hoosier Hockey Championship belt.
Dude.
I know it's going to pain you to say this, isn't it? There's a reason why I wrote it like this.
I don't even know if I'm going to say it.
Come on. You can do it.
No. Can't do it.
You can't do it?
I'm sorry.
Sensational.
That's just disgusting.
I blew that. Sensational. There we go.
That's just creepy.
So talking about our NHL affiliates, the Ottawa Senators.
Yep, they suck.
Most experts predicted...
Sorry, just a bitter Leaf fan.
Most experts, quote-unquote, predicted that the Sens would miss the playoffs and maybe even contend for the number one draft pick this season.
What expert said, that's our plan. That's the Maple Leaf plan. We're in a rebuild.
It's foolproof.
We are in a rebuild.
It is early. That could still happen. But so far, the Sens are off to a surprisingly promising start. They're 4-1 through five games.
No one even noticed.
Because
they suck.
They've won four in a row after starting the year with a loss at Nashville against a Preds team that is another early season surprise.
Not to me.
They won again.
They're
still unbeaten in regulation.
Huh. What's the difference? Oh, Barry Trotz is gone. What a surprise.
And the Sens are getting strong goaltending from Craig Anderson and Robin Lehner and balanced offense through five games. They've got 10 different players have already scored a goal. I don't think anyone has more than two. So they're getting a balanced attack, which is hopefully how the Icemen are going to win a lot of games this year. And here's the tie-in for you, sir. The Sens' next game is tonight, Wednesday, as the Battle of Ontario begins anew when your beloved Toronto Maple Leafs visit Ottawa for the first time this season. What is your prediction for this game, O master of Karnakian predictions?
I would predict the Leafs 29-0. Is
Kira Hurley going to get an assist?
And I also predict a lot of Facebook chatter between myself and don't call me Mabry, Lindsay Mabry. It'll be ugly. But that's it. 29-0. Leafs win.
Gotcha. Okay. You heard it here first.
I hate Ottawa. I even have family from Toronto that moved to Ottawa because they said, quote, Toronto is such a dirty city, unquote.
And Patafi's a Sens fan, too.
Exactly. Exactly.
That's all you need to know, yeah. Right?
Yep. Danny Everson washes clothes. That's all I'm saying. Get your T-shirts.
All right. The Booster Club has a new T-shirt for sale this season. Last season, we sold Maniac Asylum T-shirts. They sold really well, so we did another one this year. This year, the front of the shirt...
Oh, they look good.
You think so?
Yeah, I really do.
The front says Maniac for Life with the secondary Eskimo head logo.
Could bring back the Yeti, but...
The back has a bunch of home game chants in the shape of a cowbell, and they are black, not blue this year, because the team is back in black. Just $20 for all sizes. We range from adult small to 3XL, and all of the money raised goes toward the Booster Club's support of the team. The deadline to order is Sunday, November 9th. We will have them in for pickup well before Christmas, likely starting at the home game on Friday, December 5th. And we do not plan on ordering extras, so if you want one, order it. We're probably only going to order one big bulk order, and that's it. So if you want one, get it now. You can order at the Booster Club table at any home game through November 7th or on IcemanManiacs.com with your credit card through November 9th. Picture of the design, more information are at IcemanManiacs.com. And again, if you want one, get it now. There will not be extras unless we need to order a couple to get to a certain threshold of pricing for production, in which case we may have a few, but there's no guarantee that there will be anything beyond what people actually order.
And if you don't believe Michael Shockley, just go to Facebook and scroll back to December 2013, where everyone wanted T-shirts and there were none available.
Right.
So don't do it. Order your T-shirt because they're awesome and they look good, and all the money just goes right back to your Evansville Iceman.
Yep. I think they look really cool. I liked last year's shirt, but I like this one even better. It's really awesome looking, I think. Dixie did an awesome job with it. It was a collaborative effort. It was a month-long process in the Booster Club's private Facebook group where members can talk about club business and stuff. And we started with a draft, and then there was all kinds of suggestions, some of them from yours truly. And we went back and forth, and there were all kinds of changes made, and Dixie stuck with it through the whole thing and ended up with what we've got. And I think it turned out awesome.
It does. Upcoming games.
Just one game this weekend, Saturday at home against the Indy Fuel, as mentioned before. non-title affair in the Hoosier Hockey Championship, but it will be Superhero Night. The first 1,000 kids through the doors will get a superhero cape. And in the game, the Icemen will be much fresher because Indy has a very busy week. While the Icemen only play one game this week, Indy has four. They play tonight at home against Kalamazoo, Friday at home against Missouri, then they come here on Saturday, and then they're back home on Sunday against Fort Wayne. So that's a pretty grueling weekend for this early in the season. Usually the schedule's real light the first few weeks of the season, but that's tough. Four games in 5 days, home, home, road,
yeah,
home.
Yeah. Granted, that Fort Wayne trip is a lot different than our trip to Fort Wayne. So,
well, they're not going to Fort Wayne. They're going home.
Well, regardless.
But, yeah.
But, like, last weekend when they played the home and home. But, yeah, that's yeah. Got a lot of hockey.
Even if it's all at home, four games in 5 days is tough.
That's true, but you get the points early, and you build up. You stay in that top eight, and you keep everyone else away. That's the way to go.
That's
so.
True, yeah. And for
it's
those
a flip side, I mean, what did we do last year? I think we did 45 games and 92 games to end the season. So
yeah, the back half of the season yep. was really busy. For those wondering, at the home opener, Tommy Mason repeatedly promoted this weekend's game as featuring, quote, the ECHL franchise from Indianapolis. He didn't say the Indy Fuel once. And I asked him why, and he said he just hates the fact that they called themselves the Indy Fuel. It's not so much the fuel, it's the Indy part that he doesn't like. So he told me this Saturday at the game he will be referring to them as the Indianapolis Fuel.
I like it. Oh, well, I mean, Mason's nothing but awesome incarnate in that great voice. So, yeah, I'm glad he's standing up for what he believes
sticking
in.
Sticking to his guns.
Yep, the dangling tangent.
All right, so Saturday, after the home opener, the Icicles were handing out Hoosier Lottery scratch-offs as fans left the Ford Center. Amanda won $1, and I won $4. We're high rollers now. So my question for you is, what is the most you've ever won on a lottery ticket, whether it's a scratch-off or one of the big jackpot games?
$2. And it was back when I was 20 years old, and I don't think I've bought one since.
No kidding?
I've bought a bunch of... I have a grandma that loves poker. So I've bought scratch-offs and mailed them to her just because she's up in northern Michigan and the winters are cold and lonely, so I've sent her some. But I don't think I've bought a scratch-off for myself since I was 20 years old.
Really?
And I won a couple of bucks, and I turned it in for a couple more tickets, and I won a couple more bucks, and I turned it in for a couple of tickets, and then I didn't win, and then I've
you
never
decided,
bought one
that's
again.
Enough of that.
Yeah, so not
so,
my thing.
So wait, your grandma's in northern Michigan.
Yes.
So when you buy her lottery tickets and send them to her, are they Hoosier lottery tickets?
Yes, they are. And she
so
has,
if she wins, how does she cash them in?
I go up and visit, and I got to take them back to Indianapolis, and then I got to write her a check and mail her the money.
I see. So, what's the most she's ever won on your dollar?
I think she won $25 or $50 about a year ago when I sent her some
really?
Lottery tickets.
Huh,
yeah, so
cool.
I had to I cashed them in for her. And my grandma's awesome, but she called me up, and she's like, Deke, I'm so upset. I won $50, but I can't cash it. You're going to have to come up here and cash it. So she was actually upset that I would have to do all
it
this
gonna
work.
It was going to be a burden for
so,
you.
Yeah, so I had to write her a check and send it off to her and everything else. So, but everyone's happy. So
I think $50 is the biggest I've ever won, too. And it was one of those times when, like, Powerball was up to $400 million or something. I figured, well, hey, you know.
You took a shot at it and you won $50.
Yeah, exactly. I won $50. Well, and it was one of those. It freaked me out, though, because it was like the first three numbers on my card matched, and I was getting really excited, and then it didn't do anything after that. So, but yeah, I think $50 is the most I've ever won. I won $20. I remember when I was like 7 or 8, my dad bought me a scratch off here and there just because I liked scratching them off. I didn't understand what was going on, and there was one when I scratched it off and I won $20 on a scratch off. And like I said, I was 7 or 8 years old. I thought that was the biggest deal in the world, and then he wouldn't let me have the money.
Now,
like, you're not legally allowed to gamble, son, so I'll just put this right here.
Let me ask you, you win the $200 million Powerball. What are you spending that money on?
paying down debts.
Well, yeah. There's, and then you have
once
no,
all
if
that
you
stuff,
win $200 million,
you have no debts.
Yeah, because right, if you're sitting in my studio at 111 Northwest 4th Street below the Wired Coffee House and you have over $250,000 of debts, I'm really going to be impressed.
Yeah, so there's, yeah, after that, I don't know, buy a nice house, probably not here, vehicles, travel, pay off stuff for family members, things like that. What would you do with $200 million?
I'd buy the Evansville Iceman and run it my way.
What would your first move be, oh general manager?
I'd bring Dylan Clark back.
What would your position for Ryan Huff be? Would you trade him to someone for future consideration?
You know, I feel really bad about the people that spend all the money for the seats right on the glass, and there's puck marks all over the glass. Mm-hmm. So I would pay Ryan Huff a ridiculous amount of money
to clean the glass.
Like $750,000 a year for him to scratch off the glass.
Really?
Yep.
But then Ryan Huff has $750,000.
Yeah, that's right.
What would he do with that kind of money?
Well, there you go. You're just going to have to follow this Ryan Huff on Facebook.
This is going to be another reason he's going to want to come on the show.
Yeah, well, maybe he'll buy himself a win or two for his St. Louis Blues because they're obviously out of playoff contention.
Oh, boy.
Final thoughts.
My son Evan's third birthday is this Sunday. Got
fantastic.
A bunch of family coming in. He's going to be three
Not
years
so
old.
So fantastic.
Yeah.
I've met your family.
My parents are staying three nights at our house.
I'm sorry.
So if I'm not.
You can come over to my house.
If I'm not here next week, it's because I'm in jail. Yeah. So happy birthday to my son a few days early. And then next week, yeah, our next show is next week, right? Wednesday,
oh, yeah.
The 29th.
Heck yeah, we're getting excited. And not only, we haven't figured out all the details yet, but we're really hoping the week after that is that school education day, and we're hoping to maybe do a little Iceman Insights live in studio if we can talk Michael Shockley into not going back to work.
We shall see.
Yeah,
work is not going to be the problem.
It's the nooner you have planned with your your, with your and or my wife.
Yeah, exactly. That's right, yeah. Ivy hooked me up with Rebecca, so I got plans. Sorry, we're not doing a show.
So, but yeah, it should be fantastic, and boy, it's just the start of the season, and I really like how the Iceman schedule is set up, because you get one game on Saturday, and you get a couple of games this weekend, and it's slowly ramping up, but boy, before you know it, we're going to be in the thick of it 20 games in. We're going to be playing Cincy and Fort Wayne, and boy, Matt Krug's going to be coming to town, and Cincy's going to come to town, and it's going to be fantastic. We're going to be in a dogfight to try and make the playoffs, and we will cover every moment of it here on 96.9 FM Wired Radio.
And it's always amazing how fast it goes.
Yep.
You know, it's like right now we just feel, okay, it's just now starting, and then the next thing you know, it's going to be, there's eight games left. What's our magic number?
Yeah.
And then it'll be over, and it's like, what the hell happened?
So, but yep, we'll be on the radio next week.
All right, we'll see you on the radio.
The puck is in, the home team wins the good old hockey game.